Hey everybody, Joe Saladino from the Dad's Move podcast. I recently sat down with Will, a peer support specialist out of King County, Washington, so he could tell his story. Let's start the show. Will DeRuin. Did I say it right?
Yes, you did.
I'm horrible with names.
All right, it's okay. Woo-hoo.
Will is a peer support specialist for King County.
Yes, I am.
Welcome to the show. I don't have the applause track on the new board yet, so I have to
thank you for the applause. Myself. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for sitting down with me.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to talk about Will's story a little bit because, as we all know, peer work is important to tell your story, and it's important to have those lived experiences.
Yes.
So let's just start off. Where were you born?
Well, actually, I was born on Fort Lewis.
Oh.
I was born on Fort Lewis, Washington. Yes.
Okay.
And then afterwards, we moved down to Olympia. Or actually, I'm going to say Lacey. Everybody doesn't know Olympia or Lacey. So I was born in Fort Lewis, but we moved down to Lacey, Washington.
Okay. So Army brat?
yes. I guess I could say I'm an Army brat.
Okay.
All right.
Mom or dad in the Army?
My dad was in the Army.
Okay.
Yeah. Retired from Fort Lewis. He had been there for a long time.
What did he retire as?
To be honest with you, I can't tell you that one. I don't know.
Okay. Well, we'll have to call him later.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
That's got to be over the line.
Yeah.
Not going to do that. Okay. So born in Fort Lewis, yep. Then moved to Lacey.
Yes.
Where'd you go? Where'd you go to school? Tell me through the schools.
School. Liddy Hawk.
Okay.
Middle school. Nisqually High School. Timberline High School.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. Very cool. How did you like it?
Timberline was a good school to go to, actually, and everybody who I went to grew up with in the neighborhoods, we all went to the same school, so it's pretty much same people I knew from birth all the way going up high school.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah, it was
That's cool.
It was fun.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm running down the list. Brothers, sisters?
I have an older sister. She's 12 years older than me, actually.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I have a cousin that I helped take care of when he came into our family.
Oh, very cool. So, a tight-knit family?
Oh, extremely tight-knit family.
Extremely, cool.
Extremely close, extremely religious, actually. You know, went to church going on quite a bit as a young child. So my free time was pretty much school, school, church, school, school, church, and some extracurricular activities, things like that.
And so what did you do after?
After high school, I went straight to school out of state. I went down to a school, a historically black college in Louisiana called Southern University.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
I know.
What'd you study?
Actually, I just did general studies and I partied a lot.
Yeah.
I partied a lot. That was my thing because since I was at home and I was doing things at the house all the time throughout growing up, I went out to college and it was just a free fall.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It was a free fall. That's all I did was just, I would try to study as much as I could, but, you know, I came back home and it didn't work too well.
I went to Central and
okay.
it took some adjusting.
Okay.
Because you get there and they're like, well, freedom?
Yeah. Yeah. Free for everything, pretty much.
Yeah.
Especially in another state like that. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. It was fun.
So, how long were you out there?
Only for a year. That's the whole point.
See, okay.
It was only for a year, you guys. Hold on.
And so take me through what was after that.
After I went to college, I came back home. Said, okay, I'm going to start trying to go to school out here. I went to school out here for 6 months over at Eastern. Snow got me out of there, too. So, came back over here. Then after that, I had my first child. I had my first son, actually. And then after that, me and his mom split up or whatever. And then I started getting into a little bit of trouble. Then after that, buddy.
What year was your son born?
My son was
reversed.
Let's go reverse. Oh,
come on.
He's 27 now, so I can't do the math in my head that right now. So, you know.
A while ago.
Yeah.
Let's just say a while ago. Okay. And so your story picks up. With the turbulent times.
Turbulent times. Let's see. After my son then got into some, I didn't get into any trouble around that time, but being his mom split up or whatever. And I'm not going to say whatever because it was a good thing. And then then I started to have other children, you know. Three boys after that. Yeah, all two. See the look on his face, you guys.
Oh, man.
Three boys from her, you know. And then the turbulent times started to come after that.
Okay.
Started to get running around with people who I probably shouldn't have. Well, no, I'm not going to say probably. I know I shouldn't have. Right. It's a definite. I know I shouldn't have. And started running around in the streets and things like that. you know, started taking things into my body that I know it shouldn't have been in there, you know.
Do you know what prompted that to start?
Actually, what prompted that was I don't think I had a full thought of what I wanted to do in my life. So everything was kind of like up and down, up and down, up and down. And I chose the down path around that. You know what I mean? I didn't have anything set and goal about what I wanted to do. From those times I went to college, I had a goal in my life. Then it just kind of dropped. I had all these children and it's like, okay, now I just have to be a father.
Okay.
Boom. I just have to be a father now.
So all that stress, all that responsibility, all that. Because your background, you're talking about like, it isn't the stereotype, right? It isn't the stereotype of, oh, broken home, parents not around.
No, not at all. You know? It was just the young child not listening to his parents is what it is with me. I'm not laughing to make a joke of it, but it's the honest to God truth, though. Usually it is a stereotype that most people who do things that I have did up to this point in my life have just one parent home. I had two. I just didn't listen. It does happen, but here we go. I'm here.
And so the responsibility is weighing down and
it hurts. It hurts. And it's an eye opening experience, especially when it's a multitude of children coming into your life that quickly. You're not thinking about it and you're just out partying and children's coming. So it's like, okay, wow. You don't know what to do. You don't want to really live up to what you got to do. And that's a hard one. You really don't. I'm going to say it again, you guys. You really don't know. You really don't want to live up to what you really have to do. It's called responsibility, you know? At a young age like that, you really don't want to live up to those things.
How close were your kids or are your kids?
All of my kids, as far as what? Their age. All of my children, all of my five boys that I do have are all 2 years apart, almost to a T.
Oh, wow.
They're all pretty much 2 years apart. And I have another child in there that just kind of got slid in there too through this whole process as he's laughing, you guys. But yeah.
Way you said it. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I have five boys that are all pretty much 2 years apart.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So what happened? What did you start doing?
Honestly, after that, I got involved in doing drugs and drinking heavily for a very, very long period of time. And it got to the point where I had didn't know where I was at. Delusional. Started doing things, running around in the streets, doing things just to maintain your stability. I'm going to say this one again, you guys. You're going to maintain to do things to just to maintain your stability. And so what I was doing is doing things to maintain getting high. Stealing, you know, robbing, things like that. Simple little crimes like that that got me into trouble at the end of the day. So as these things started to build up, here we go. Things started to build up. I got in trouble just like that. Committed a crime, got in trouble.
Got caught.
He got me. Got caught. Yeah, I did. Me and another individual got caught. And now we're sitting in jail.
Wow.
Yep.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. You're right.
So was that the first arrest? The first time?
That was just the first time.
Straight to jail. Don't pass go. So,
do not pass go. No nothing. Parents have always been there through my life, but they let me sit in there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's tough love.
Damn. How long?
I sat in the jail for, I would say, about 6 months. And then, you know, drugs that's on you is starting to come off of you or whatever. And then reality starts to hit in. And then I go see the prosecuting attorney, and they say, okay, well, look, you're looking at, count, remember these numbers, you guys, 120 months. Do the math. All right, I'm gonna say it again, 120, yeah. So I go back, I look at the papers. I'm like, oh, okay, 120. I'm thinking, okay, you know, some days, no. Then here comes the drugs coming off of me again, and somebody told me, no, man, look at that, count those numbers. Yeah, I was like, oh no, we gotta go back and talk about this again. So I'll go back. Comes back with another number. I said, okay, and that's nine years. I don't know.
So you were with a plea deal is what you're talking?
Yeah. Okay. Trying to come with a plea deal. And so.
So you plead guilty and they give you this time.
Okay. I'm trying to do the math so that I already know my children is going to be involved. I will miss some time for my children's life. That's just a guarantee. I'm just trying to do the less amount of them. So final answer is this one. I had to do 3 years.
Okay.
To make a long story short, in that part, I just did 3 years. So I went and did my 3 years. I started the entry into the prison system. And
I just got chills.
Yeah, it was rough. I mean, when I first went in, then reality set in. I'm just around a bunch of gentlemen, and I can't see my children. There's a gate. There's fences. Everybody has the same color on pretty much. You have a specific kind of diet. All these kind of things. But here's some things that I will always remember when I began to become incarcerated, the tough love that my parents gave me, the whole time I was there, my parents came to see me.
Oh, wow.
My mom, it was either my mom, my dad, my children, the pastor of my church.
All right. Where were you at?
The first time, the first part of it, I was at Airway Heights in Spokane. Then I went to Stafford Creek. Then I went to Cedar Creek.
But so you had a ton of support still, in the system too. Like it wasn't, he's gone.
No.
Like.
No. That's called love.
Wow.
It was tough love, but it was love. I didn't like it. Yeah, of course I was upset, but it was, at the end of the day, it was a blessing. And that's what I look at it. So I would get a visit, even when I was over in Airway Heights in Spokane. I would get a visit. Or I would get money in my books, phone calls. They would make sure their schedules was different so I could contact them and talk to them. So they're shifting their lives for me.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I know. It really is. And so I always thank them every day because of that. And so after I did that, we come over here on this side of the mountains for me being at Airway Heights. My kids get to come see me every weekend. But then I have the opportunity to get this job with this lady. She had found out I had used to work at a school district. And she came to me and she said, you know what? Would you want to be willing to come work with these other inmates, helping them do their resumes? I said, sure. You know, anything's better than working in the kitchen. So sure. So I go ahead and I do this job. And this woman is just sitting here while I'm conducting this class. She just gives me this opportunity to do this. So I start conducting this class for other inmates who are about to leave to go back into society. Resumes, you know, job interviews and how to just conduct themselves. Things like that. She's just sitting there knitting, and I'm doing that. And I'm still getting visits. So I did that for the remainder of the time that I was there. And then I finally got out. And here comes my parents come to pick me up. I was so happy. That was one of the happiest days of my life.
So hold on, because I think I misunderstood, and I want to make sure that those that are listening understood. So the resume job and all that work was while you're still in?
I was still okay. Incarcerated.
Okay. I had made the assumption you were out, and that was your first out. Okay, so you were in doing that.
Yes.
Did that, I'm making assumptions, did that help you get through to have that?
It helped me make it a lot. Just because it kept me busy. It kept my mind off of the other activities that was taking place while I was incarcerated. All the fights or arguments or people upset because of this. I just was able to keep to myself and go to work and look forward to my visits.
And so you're out.
I'm out.
Did you do the full three?
I did full 3 years, man. Come on.
Nothing, man, for good behavior? Nothing for...
That was the good behavior part of it. That was it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was it.
Oh, okay.
It. Was
so it was behavior. Three if you're good behavior. Mess up and we'll tack on,
yeah,
more.
Yeah.
Okay, so great, you're out.
Yeah.
Now ta-da. What?
Ta-da.
Right?
Well, now out, we have roundabouts around the streets and stuff, you know. We got more buildings and
only
stuff.
3 years, yeah, and the whole world changed.
I'm telling you, everything changed. Like Legos now, we have Star Wars and stuff, you know. But I come out, I just go start seeing my probation officer and things like that. I'm moving back with my parents. My mom makes sure that I'm going to go see my probation officer. That's a definite. You know, mom's is going to make sure her son is going to go see his probation officer.
We came and saw you.
Yeah,
you better go see your PO.
Right now. And that's exactly right now. She wasn't playing. And so, but one time, I do remember this. One time, I decided I didn't want to go. So I left out of town for a little bit. Couple of days, couple of weeks, like a month. And my probation, he was looking for me, right? So
right.
My, yeah. So he goes, calls my mom or whatever. And so finally, her and my uncle had came to pick me up, and he brought me to my probation officer's office. I was gone, you know. I got, I said, all right, mama, here I come. So he's sitting there laughing, you guys. And so she comes and picks me up. She brings me to my probation officer's office, right? So I'm turning myself in. He goes, you know what? It's too crowded or whatever. You know, I'm going to send you back. You go, my mom was like, no. You need to take him right now.
Oh, jeez.
I promise you guys exactly what she said. So I went back to my mom's house again. Did I try to get out and mess around again? Of course I did.
Of course.
So, of course I did. So I'm not listening to her. Yeah, hard, hard lessons. So I leave out of town for like another couple months or something like that. And then I come back home and she's like, all right, this is going to be it. You know, and so I started walking the straight path then, and this is where I started turning my life around a lot more, because I start realizing that my sons had also started to be affected. If I'm start acting like this again, they missed out on me while I was incarcerated, but they still saw me. But it was like, you could come see your father, but there's still restrictions around. There's still those gates around. I still only could come in and out certain times of the week to come see my father. So now being home, now dad's messing up. We didn't did this for you. Okay, so now, all right, let me just stop tripping and let me just go ahead and start making right moves like I should. Because now, if I get caught messing around again, this probation officer gets a hold of me, I'm not going to come out for a little bit. You know what I mean? I'm going to do some little extra time. And so some friends of the family, whatever, had helped me out, get back on track just to say, look, okay, you need some more support or whatever for your son. Let's get him on track to doing this. We're going to make sure that he starts walking down these paths, and they just accumulated and start helping me out pretty much.
So how did that feel when you saw your kids kind of getting off the path?
It you know, all of them have different characteristics and things like that. But if I'm not showing them the right way, then they're going to start following me, period, point blank. Right. That's just an obvious thing. And so it was starting to hurt my feelings that if I continue to act this way, my children's going to act this way.
Because you're the leader, right? You're the example.
I have to be the example for my children. I have to be, period. Regardless if me and their mothers are together, I have to be somewhat of a good role model in their lives, period, point blank.
And so you get a little more support?
Yes.
And so where did you go from there?
From there, from there, after I had got a bunch of support and things like that, I just started getting back on track. Just started working.
Okay. Was that part of being back on track?
Getting work and finding little jobs here and there and things like that. And I had found a job all the way up in Seattle. Met a female, you know.
Well, and you were still in Lacey at the time? Okay.
Found a job up here. I met a female first. Wow. Let's throw the female in there first. I felt a wonderful female first, everybody. and then she had lived up north. And pretty much what it was is we continued to talk. And I had the opportunity to move up north. And I think that was another good blessing I had, is because if I would have stayed in the surrounding area that I was, I would have never grown. I would have regressed. I would have never progressed.
Right. And get out of the environment that you were.
It has to have some solution to it, because evidently the environment wasn't working for me at that time. And it wasn't because of my parents or anything. It was just because in general.
Well, you know, all the places to do all the things that you're trying to avoid.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
You're absolutely 100% right.
Okay, and so you get a job.
Yeah.
You move up to Seattle.
Move in with my now future wife.
Oh, that gets another clap.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Newlywed.
Congratulations.
you move up with my now wife, and we start having a very close relationship. Find a job doing little odds and end things up in Seattle. Then I start working for Amazon, driving and delivering for Amazon. Leading up to almost currently right now, but I had got my foot ran over.
Oh.
My big toe ran over.
In the warehouse?
No, like driving, like a vehicle ran over my feet, laughing again, ran over my big toe.
What?
No, I'm just saying it's so simple.
How do you hit it?
Hey, I'm all in all blue. I don't know, man.
How do you hit a delivery driver? Come on.
I'm in all blue. It's just Amazon everywhere. They should have not seen, you know.
Where were you delivering? Were you in Seattle?
Like 4 blocks from my house. That's the funny thing.
Okay, Seattle drivers, be better.
Yeah.
Be better.
I caught me off guard.
Don't be Tacoma drivers. Come on, be better.
He got me off guard on that one. That was funny, bro.
It's not okay. It's not okay. Okay, so get your foot run over.
Okay, my big toe run over, and I don't realize how much you really need it. He's laughing again to stand up, okay? So I'm off on LMI for a good little while. And sitting at home one day, I'm tired of sitting doing nothing. And I push the button, and ta-da. Push the button, and here comes this nice man named Nelson who calls me.
Hey, Nelson.
Yeah, clap, Nelson. Clap.
There you go.
That was like a radio station. Now you got
right.
This. Yeah.
Right.
Nelson called me up, you know, and he had seen everything I put on my application, my resume, my background, and everything. And this man, pretty much, I had always wanted to go back to working at a school district or helping somebody else in their lives. I have an outgoing attitude, nice personality, I think, for the most part. And Nelson just came to me, looked at everything, and came to me 100% and said, you just gave me the chance, pretty much, for me to come on to a great organization with a great group of people to work with, with a great foundation already started off, and he has a great mind on his head. And he just came to me 100% about, look, if you have an idea, just come to me. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. He's saying no, hell, because he knows this is how this man works like this, and he really has a lot of trust and faith in us as workers. I want to raise.
that's the opening to the interview. Before anything, before anything, he's going to be like, I need a raise.
Yeah, he's going to laugh at that.
Or I'm just going to cut it and text it to Nelson. Hey, this is the highlight of the episode.
That's funny.
Did you see any, or did you experience any barriers getting back into work?
That was what, yes.
Because you're talking school districts. You're talking.
I worked at school districts and stuff, but you know what? Sometimes just people who you know, and they will give you opportunities to do things. But working, getting out of being incarcerated, or even being incarcerated for a short period of time, no matter where you are, once you are released, it trying to get a job is one of the hardest things that I have ever had to go through in my life. But it is worth the patience, and it is worth the endurance that you go through, because you will get things that you want if you go down the right path. I don't know if I can repeat those exact words, but those are words that I try to live by. And another thing I learned while I was incarcerated, though, and I tell people this a lot, is that by the snap of a finger, people are not living. So people should be thankful that you still have air to breathe out your lungs every single moment that you have. And so therefore, you should cherish every moment in your life. I live by that every day. I try to live by that every day, because I always preach it to people. But then my wife catches me and she goes, I don't think you're paying attention to what you didn't said. So that's where the whole peer thing comes in, because you still learn. You're always still learning.
Well, and talking about the peer aspect and the lived experience, I don't have experience in the system at all, but I've got to think there's got to be a lot of fear. Fear going in, fear while you're in, fear coming out.
Me going in, I was scared just for the simple fact I'm around a bunch of dudes. I'm the skinny little small guy. You know what I mean? And all these other guys in here, one of my cellmates was in there for life. So I'm like, I'm taking up this man's space. I need to go somewhere else or something like that. He's like, man, you don't belong in here because of the attitude that you have on your shoulders. You don't belong in here because you probably did something that you probably, some small little thing that you know that you shouldn't have did, that you just got caught or something like that. But that was a fearful thing for me to know this man is never going to get out of prison, ever.
What's he got to lose?
Ever. Yeah. Now I'm scared. You know, now he has nothing to, he is never going to get out again. Yeah, that's a very harsh thing for me to realize. So when I got out, now I try to cherish every moment. Pass by the jail, I pray for these gentlemen. Come back and forth wherever I go, no matter what city I'm in, I always pray for them every single morning.
I'm curious because I know sometimes it's hard for people to have compassion for those that have slipped up, for those who have been incarcerated. Is it easier for you because you've been through the experience, do you think?
I'm
assuming you have compassion for these gentlemen because you're praying for them.
I have a lot of compassion for gentlemen who have been incarcerated to some extent, because some, for a good percentage of them, they do want to change. And especially the ones who have children, and I see that they are trying to be good fathers for their child, because sometimes it may take for them to be incarcerated to realize, hey, look, okay, let me turn it around. It's hard to say out of my mouth, but it took me to be like that with my children and in my life. I do have a lot of compassion for them. And that's the reason why I took the job that I have, because I will always give my 100% to these gentlemen, because I was given 100% by my family. And some of these people do not have 100% in their family or in their corner, but I will be 100% to them because that's my job. But I think that's just something I like to do.
I was about to say, I don't think it's because it's your job.
Yeah, but I mean, I do this anyways. You know what I mean?
It sounds like this is something coming from deep inside your soul.
Yeah, everybody has certain things they like to do. Like, you like to do all this. I can't do, man, you see guys to see all these lights and stuff. You do a very good job of what you do. This is your dream, and this is what you do. You're good at, you know? And so I like to make sure I try to touch somebody's life at least once throughout the day. So I've achieved my goal.
One more on the compassion piece. How can those of us without that lived experience find that compassion, do you think?
How they could find it, they could just at least leave some door open, so when people do approach them, don't always keep their guard up, because sometimes that may happen. When somebody approaches you, a lot of people who could be strangers, like, oh, I don't want to talk to you, whatever. That person may have a good word to tell you, even though they are a stranger. Always leave your door open to people.
I like it.
Yeah, thank you.
I like it.
I just pulled that one. That was a new one, man.
Boom. There you go. Man, we're making posters here. We're gonna quit and go to Hallmark. We're gonna start making greeting cards.
On the other side of buses or something, you guys. Come on.
Prison greeting cards.
Or something, man. I'm telling you, man, those things really do come in handy. When I was incarcerated, I journaled every day. Simple things. Went to get some water, da-da-da-da. I did it Sunday through Saturday. I went back on the following Sunday and I read for the week. And some of the things I wrote, I was like, man, I did some really dumb things and I really thought some really dumb things and I tore it up or I kept it. But I made sure I would never repeat what I did because I didn't made a full circle. Never repeat what mistakes you have made because you never learned. Ah,
I always learning.
Yeah, there you go, man. I'm telling you. I'll tell that to my children. So
I love it.
my youngest son picked up on it very well. He's so hyper about stuff like that. It's ridiculous, man. He really is. He really is. They all have their own little pieces and right. doing things. It's just, I don't know. It's funny. It is so funny.
That's awesome. What do you hope the future holds? What are you hoping to do from here?
From here, I was asked that at my interview. Actually, but it's interesting. What I would like to do is open up my own business to give back to the community to some extent, somewhere, where I'm living at, wherever, to some extent. But for now, continue doing what I'm doing because this is the job I've been wanting to do. I've always wanted to give back or do something for somebody else, and I always have to some extent, no matter what job I've had. So this is what I want to do. This is a job I've been asking and praying for.
Well, and talk about a unique situation and a unique opportunity to be able to give back in that way.
Everybody, I got my voting rights back. My fines are paid. I mean, come on, you don't hear people being incarcerated and their fines are paid. Most people are avoiding paying.
Well, tell them why.
This is why I forgot. My mom had helped me pay my fines for so long that they had got tired of seeing her up to the place so many times. No, but they were being nicer. My fines are written off pretty much, you guys. And I got my voting rights back. And now I pay more attention to politics than I ever have in my life what's going on. And especially since the things that are going on in America today. So
thanks, Mom.
Thanks, Mother. I love you so much.
It is a rare opportunity that I meet somebody that has a mom as good as mine. And I think we got, Mom, I think we got competition.
Yeah, she does it all the time still, but my mom, I get that. I get how my attitude is from my mom and my dad. They both give to everybody and they're just open minded like that. You're going to meet them one day. Trust me, I'm not worried.
I'm determined
you're
now.
Ready
after
right
this,
now.
I'm like, I got to meet this woman.
I'm telling you, man, they're just like that. And so it stays in your DNA. But if you don't have it, all you got to do is try and you get it with it once, you pass it on.
It seems like you're really sharing that legacy by the work you're doing and giving back.
This is the best. I can't ask for anything more than what I'm doing right now, to be completely honest with you. I can't ask for nothing more because there are a lot of people who need, not just fathers, there are a lot of people in general who just need help.
Right.
So you help one person, right? I didn't achieve the goal, but I'm going to work with these fathers because there's a lot of fathers, not just fathers, but I'm going to work helping these fathers because they need help because if they are assigned to me or I'm working with them, they need my help for something. And I'm going to give them 100% guaranteed.
That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you, Will, for coming on the show and telling your story. If you know of a peer who would like to come on and share their story as well, drop me a line, jsaladino@dadsmove.org, and we'll see what we can do about getting them on the show. Thanks for listening.